You're listening to the Scottish Football Forums podcast, the home of Scottish football banter.
Hi, welcome to the latest episode of Scottish Football Forums podcast. We're at season 13, episode 11. I'm John, and tonight joined by Josh. How you doing?
Good evening, Governor. How we doing, mate?
Good. Not that the football's really been that great this week, but I am alright, for a Monday.
Aberdeen pumped. How did Talbot go on the weekend?
Talbot won, actually.
Did they? That's a change.
Well, for this season, it's a weird one, because I've always kind of had the laugh on the podcast about if Aberdeen aren't doing well, I've always got Talbot, but this season, they've both been struggling.
Mm-hmm.
We shall see what happens. Dave will be joining us as well later on during the podcast. And we have the first of our music football specials of the season. We have Kilmarnock fan and music man John Hamilton on. How you doing?
Yep, I'm very well. Good for a Monday.
Good for a Monday. Good. Good to have you on as well.
Yeah, good to be on the show. Thanks for having me. Hopefully we'll have a good wee laugh up on the way.
As I said, we've already had a few laughs. We can have some laughs at me with the football, definitely. how's Meadow getting on, Josh?
Bottom of the league by an absolute mile.
But you've got a game in hand.
I think we're a point behind you, 2 points behind you.
It's weird seeing the two of us down the bottom.
I was saying to my mate at the weekend, it is like the league's a bit kind of topsy-turvy right now, isn't it? You've got Med at Cumnocker down there and all, and so are Glenafton, and, you know, it's a bit kind of topsy-turvy, because up the top you've got, Darvel, obviously, but you've got Beath, and I think St. Cads are up there and all, you know.
We'll talk about it in more detail once we finally get our West of Scotland podcast window. We'll get
absolutely.
It so I'd like to kick off, we'll kind of touch on it a wee bit, but last week we were all excited about Scotland England. I know it was only a friendly, but we did win to win. And
yeah.
I met Josh at half time in the game on Tuesday, and safe to say he was raging. I wasn't happy either, but you were proper raging. I don't know about yourself, John, if you got to see the game. Or...
I follow Scotland. I mean, I probably get Mary a buzz watching Scotland and Kilmarnock. Do you know what I mean? I think watching your country, it means a bit more. So I've been very happy with how we're doing, and Steve Clarke, and just the whole idea is we get playing better. I mean, it's been great. But I think the England game, it was a bit disappointing, I can agree. I don't think there was much oomph put into the game, or do you know what I mean? It was kind of like a friendly, really, wasn't it, the way we were playing? I don't think we played as well as what we'd normally do against England, but I think the next few games is a bit more important. But we never want to get beat off your old enemy, let's be honest. But I think because it was a friendly, and I just think the games coming up are going to be more important.
Aye, definitely. I think when we were kind of speaking about it last week, in terms of after the game, the way I kind of saw it is England looked more up for it, which was a weird one, but I put it down to the fact that we played a first team lineup. England played a few fringe players, and whether it was maybe a case of the fringe players in England team were all determined to impress Southgate to try and kind of get a place in the team, whether that had an impact. And maybe a mixture as well of, I think, and maybe a bit on, but I think maybe Steve Clarke gave England a wee bit too much respect. There's no doubt England are a good team. But I've never really seen England over the last few years as being a good passing team. You sat off them far too much and just let them have the ball. And if you do that with most teams, whether it's a good team or a bad team, give a team time and space in the ball, they will hurt you, and that's how it ended up, isn't it, Josh?
Well, for a Just one thing I've got to pick you up on, John. I don't know how much your England B team is. I think on the last pod, granted, we established that I do not know anything about the England team. But who would the B
I'm
players?
Probably the same.
Who would the B players?
So Ramsdale's not their normal first choice keeper.
Who
the
is?
Centre, this Pickford.
Right.
The centre back pairing are Dunk and Gray. That's not their first choice lineup. It's usually Stones and Maguire.
Right.
Foden, for all that he's great, isn't usually a starter for them.
Is he not, right?
And Rashford as well isn't like a regular starter. And then Phillips has been in and out the team recently.
Not
playing at Man City. So five or six
are probably not
considered regular starters just now, but no doubt their quality still.
Well, I mean, the thing is, they only really needed quality from one player, Jude Bellingham, who, look, when I met you at half time, let's not beat around the bush. I was absolutely blazing. So let's get that in the record. Myself, yourself, and good friend of the podcast, Laurie Finlayson, had a bit of a ding dong at half time about how the first half had went. We were absolutely pish. Pish with a capital P. I felt that we treated it like a friendly. Just don't think there was any desire really to go on the ball and make something happen. I know what you mean by saying we gave them too much respect, but I don't think we gave them any. I don't think we gave them any respect in a sense of we didn't even, you know, respect ourselves enough to perform in that first half because we're absolutely terrible. We came into it a wee bit in the second half, gave ourselves a lifeline by forcing the own goal. And then what happened was 2 minutes later, they ran up the other end of the park and scored. But all three goals come from, you could argue, defensive lapses in our play, albeit Jude Bellingham is world class, and I hate to say that. It's not going to be the barometer of things going forward. Learning curve, definitely. We've got two big games coming up in a matter of weeks. Spain away, competitive, and France away as a friendly. But, you know, two huge games to test ourselves against two big teams. So we need a bit of a response to that pish performance versus England. I just want to beat England once. You know, that was my...
No, it's been a while since we have bet them.
That was my sixth time seeing them, John. And I went, no, let me think here. First one was 2012, then the Celtic Park one in 2014, then the two qualifiers in the Euros, and then that was the sixth one. It's nae use constantly losing to England. So... going to want a wee bit better going forward for the team against the big, because ultimately, that's how we're going to qualify out of this group when we get to Germany.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, I just think it was, with the way we've been playing, and I don't know, it was maybe a bad time to kind of play England. I know the game got announced about a year ago, wasn't it? You know what I mean? But see with the kind of form we've been in, and then having that winning streak stopped and then still get two hard games to come up with. I mean, for all you know, we could be looking at three defeats in a row. Hopefully not. But I think it was probably a bad time to play them, in all honesty. But a good time as well with the kind of form that we're in too. So I think we should have played better. And I just think with the way that we've been playing, it was a wee bit lackluster, as you are saying, guys.
I think Clark though mentioned as well after the game that he wants us to be playing these types of games because effectively for us to have any aspirations to kind of keep doing well, you need to be playing these teams. You play against the better teams, you develop better as a player. So we've had good results against some of the bigger teams, and the good thing is it's been in competitive matches.
Yeah.
I mean, over the years, I mean, I know folks say I wasn't going to Scotland against Israel, but I've been going since the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty woeful at friendlies. I would love to look at our friendly record since mid-90s to now and see what it's like. I don't have very many good memories of friendlies at Hampden. I mean, do you, Josh? I've met very many good memories of friendlies.
Friendlies at Hampden. I noticed how you glossed over history there, John, and erased out about how many years was it you stopped going to Scotland games for?
Two years, just two.
Right, okay. Friendlies at Hampden. No, I could tell you some proper pish ones. Let me think here. America, USA at Hampden. There's about 19,000 folk there. Whoa. Costa Rica before they went after the World Cup. That was bad. I'll tell you the worst one I ever know at Hampden. Worst one ever was a Canada friendly at Easter Road.
Well, I was going to mention Easter Road. There's probably been a few Easter Road, to be honest.
Been a couple, been a couple of pish ones. Hampden particularly. It's a terrible place for friendlies. Mm-hmm. I hate friendlies now anyway. You know what I mean? I used to get right up for them. I love away friendlies. Mm-hmm. Because you know you're going away. Like, see this France where I'm not going to it on this occasion, just because the circumstances out with my control. But I'm not. So I'm going to Spain, but then just coming straight back for there. A lot of the boys are going on to France after that. But that France friendly away would be a good one to go to. Even if we get pumped, it's still a good trip, you know. But no many positive memories of friendlies.
We think the game told us any more about the Scotland team that we didn't know already. I'm thinking, I mean, we were speaking at half time in terms of how predictable we were with just constant attacks down the left, McGregor, Tierney, Robertson, mm-hmm. constant. And see again, I think I mentioned it last week in the podcast, see again to better teams, they'll find you out on that one. You need to match up for you a bit more. And actually, the goal we scored came from us attacking down the right with Hickey.
Mm-hmm.
There was much else. I mean, we've not really kind of learned anymore. Maybe we're kind of fringe players because they never like much game time again.
Was it no Robertson that forced the cross though? Was it no Robertson that crossed it in and Maguire skelped it in? Am I remembering that wrong? I was fucking steaming.
Trying to think back, but I'm pretty sure I do remember. Sure it... Certainly, we got a bit of joy going down the right in terms of attacking.
No, but I know what you mean. I do know what you mean, but you've got to remember as well is that. You know, with Tierney and Robertson on the left-hand side, that's predominantly going to be our strongest area of the pitch with them two interlinking. What you've got to hope is that, you know, at a given time, we get the same... Okay, you're probably not going to get the same level of quality with the two of them, but, you know, a similar kind of setup on the right side. And I think that the prospect is there with two, you know, incredibly talented right backs and two very good right sided centre backs in Ryan Portis and John Souter. So I do think there's enough kind of going forward into the future. But I mean, you're saying there, John, the big teams will find you out. Spain didn't find us out. You know?
Yep.
you know, we absolutely banjoed them at Hampden.
It's different. I don't think we were just constantly down the left or midfield getting involved. We were getting involved in different areas, so I do think we need to mix it up a bit more.
True. Oh no, that's a fair comment. Like I said at half time, to yourself and Laurie, McTominay was pish. I didn't even know if he was playing the game. Che was crap.
Yeah, I would agree with McTominay. He was pretty poor that night. Wasn't a lot of his great that night, to be honest. I mean, Christie and Dyke certainly made a difference when they come on. That's what I was going to ask you. Do you think he should have went with Dykes to begin with? Or would you have went with Adams?
I would have went with Dykes
as well, in all honesty.
Yeah, I think it's just his class. I think Adams is a better technical footballer, but I don't think that was a game for a. I think that was a game for somebody that's got to run themselves into the fucking ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Dykes, you know.
Yeah, Dykes. He's definitely a lot more physical and stuff, and maybe that's what we needed. You know what I mean?
Gets his goals as well.
He definitely does. We're doing well. It's good to see. So, but what was your first ever Scotland game that you've watched? I think my first ever memory was World Cup 90. And I remember us beating Sweden 2-1. Stuart McCall when I think Mo Johnston scored. We won 2-1 against Sweden, Italia 90. I think that was my first ever sort of memory, or one that I can remember watching Scotland.
First,
and it was amazing.
first memory I remember is Brazil, Scotland, Brazil.
World Cup 98, amazing, it was some game until Tom Boyd scored the OG, I think there was what, about 14 minutes 13 minutes left or something. We were pretty close to getting a draw.
I mean, the thing is, Sean, I was only 5 year old, so I don't think the term, I think I just kind of knew at that point in time, I knew that something was wrong because everybody in the room was raging, you know.
I'll be showing my age here, but the first memory I've got of watching Scotland was when we played Australia in the build-up or the qualifier for the 1986 World Cup. So, that's
86 World
age.
Cup.
86, right. Cool.
Prior to that, we drew 0-0 in Australia and then won 2-0 at home.
Yeah, I think with Scotland as well, like with the all the the World Cup, I think is it the only team to be unbeaten in the group stage but still no qualify?
Aye, there is some sort of record like
that.
Yeah,
there is.
I can't remember what it is.
The worst unluckiest team ever, I think, at times, you know what I mean? And then think of Euro 96, I think England, if Clivert hadn't scored that goal, we would have been through, because we had 4 points and England were up 4-0. Clivert scored with about 7 minutes to go and we dropped down to third because of it.
Aye, definitely.
That one goal. So there's been some very unlucky moments, but hopefully those days are by.
Dave, do you remember the first Scotland match that you watched?
A good question, actually. I'm younger, obviously.
Aye.
Obviously, too immature to remember. Obviously, too immature to remember France 98. So, I'm not going to put that in the category here because France 98 is far too immature for my liking. In terms of when I was a bit more mature as a kid, I'd probably say Scotland Faroe Islands, was it 2005? I think Scotland won 2-0.
Aye, man, that makes me feel old.
Hey, same with me.
I was old enough to drink in the pub for France 98.
Fucking hell, mate.
I was the four.
No, it's hard to tell what you're looking at.
I know, aye.
I think I was 15, coming on 16, aye. Or maybe 16, I don't know.
But aye, it was a friendly, move on, Spain, and then we'll get a point in Spain, won't we?
I think. Hey, let's fucking go. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm just tequila sangria. Fucking brilliant! Can't wait, man.
If we say something about this team, is they have proven before they can bounce back from setbacks.
Aye.
Usually, a response when we have a defeat. So,
Clark's teams are normally good at doing that. He done it a lot with Kelly. There was a lot of times we were getting beat, like 1-2-0, and we would come back and win quite a lot of the time. So hopefully, well, we never want to really be losing, but if we get some good comebacks, like Norway, for example, I mean, how good was that? You know what I mean? So
brilliant, exceptional.
Well, let's move on from Scotland just now then. That brings us up with a nice link. So obviously, you as a Cali fan, John, going to ask, and it's maybe a daft question, but who is your favourite Kelly manager of your lifetime?
Oh, Kelly manager. Ooh. Probably Steve Clark, without a doubt. Yeah. Just because what he done, and look, he's a local lad and stuff. Obviously, his brother played with Kelly and all that as well. But I think what he done for Kelly in short space of time and the connection he got and everything, I think it'd be Steve Clark.
Right, okay. And in terms of your family, all Kelly fans, how are you getting to supporting Kilmarnock?
I used to stay with my grand and papa at the weekends when I was younger, and they used to take me to the games all the time and just kind of get brought up that way. I mean, my dad's a Celtic fan and half my other family are like Rangers fans, so my wee brother's a Celtic fan as well. So I kind of managed to escape the old firm.
That's probably for the better. Do you remember your first game then? You said you went at six, you remember it? Or...
I think we were in the Division Two. I think we just kind of maybe signed Tommy Burns at the time and kind of stuff like that. And I remember us beating, it was the last game of the season. I think Cowdenbeath we got promoted. And I remember my gran telling me this story, like when we get obviously the 90 minutes went, it was a pitch invasion. I don't know, I was like six or seven at the time, and I remember asking my grand, "Does my hair look all right?" before I ran on the pitch because I thought it was going to be on the TV.
We'll be asking
Watching left
that
now, that's what I was going to say.
question now. Yeah. Aye, so I like early memories in there. So what about favourite players growing up?
I don't know. Paul Wright was one. Paul Wright was a great striker for Kelly. I love George McCluskey as well. Like, see the skill he had. He was about 34, I think, when we signed him, but he was absolutely brilliant. Tommy Burns as well, obviously. But yeah, I would say maybe Paul Wright.
I remember Paul Wright at Aberdeen. Do you know
Yeah.
these Josh and Dave? Do you know Paul Wright? Heard of him?
Got to be honest, it's not a name I'm familiar with.
No, he was good. I think
Let,
Kelly.
I take it as a Kelly kind of legend for the 90s.
He's for the 90s, aye. Okay, he was a top scorer. I don't
Cup
know,
winner.
it was maybe, I don't know, just because I was kind of growing up and, do you know what I mean? At a younger age that he kind of just caught my eye and was one of my favourites. But don't know, I've got quite a lot of favourite players, probably for a bit later on, like, I don't know, Christoph Kokard, Andy McLaren, obviously Alexei Eremenko, cannot forget him. He's probably one of the best players I've watched, I think, Eremenko.
I don't be giving too much of my way just now because obviously we've got the show stopping at the end where you'll pick your best 11. So I
Yeah.
we're not going into kind of too much more detail. So my favourite memory supporting Kilmarnock.
Probably winning the Scottish Cup and beating Celtic in the League Cup. They're probably the biggest and kind of best memories, I would say. Been to four cup finals. We won two and you beat two. So I think that's not too bad for a Kelly fan.
Aye, definitely. We've got a special guest trying to join us there.
Hope it's not a Bully XL.
No.
Yeah,
So I see actually one thing I've noticed anytime I've been at Kelly for an Aberdeen game, they're quite good at half time of playing music from local musicians. Have you ever had your songs played at Rugby Park at half time?
I haven't actually. I don't know. I'll need to do that, actually. I'll need to. I don't know how they do it or who you send it to or whatever, but no, I've not done that, but I would like to play at Rugby Park maybe at half time or something like that. I'd like to actually do that, like take my guitar, and I know a lot of kind of football clubs do it now, and I think it's really good that the, do you know what I mean, try and promote kind of independent artists and stuff like that as well. So I think it's really good.
I definitely. But I know it's something I've always noticed when I've been at Rugby Park. You noticed it, Josh, when you've been there. They kind of play local bands.
No.
Over the tannoy, in terms of, I don't mean in the Guinness
I
area.
mean, it's not something I've never. I have noticed that they do a lot of, like they do a lot of the KA1 cam thing where they'll put local kind of bands, music on to kind of montage clips of like so like they might do all the filming for a particular match. They say it's Kelly versus St Johnstone. All the kind of filming that the media team have done that day, you know, crowd, players training, players scoring goal for the touchline and all that. They'll mash all that up together and put some in slow motion and whatever, and put an artist or music on in the background and put it up on their socials, and they'll generally pick a kind of local Ayrshire based artist a lot of the time. You know, I mean, you get your big ones, obviously, like Biffy Clyro, Fatherson, but you know, other kind of local Ayrshire artists have featured as well, which is pretty cool. So hopefully that'll be a wee thing for coming ahead in the future, John.
Aye, no, definitely, definitely. It'd be good. The more support, the better. Obviously, but yes, I think the music scene's buzzing. It really is. There's a lot of bands and people kind of doing it, I think now. It's easy to get your music up in Spotify and all the sort of platforms. It was kind of quite difficult if you go back maybe sort of 15 years ago. It was pretty hard to get your stuff up.
How do you feel it is over the Ayrshire scene? Because before, when we've had Mark Brownbear on and we've had Lyle from Box of Trash on, that's been one of the biggest problems is the music scene in Ayrshire isn't kind of great. There's obviously the festivals you get, the odd ones like Press Fest and you get Live at Troon and you get things like that, but it doesn't seem to be a kind of regular thing with it. But obviously, bands are having to kind of travel to Glasgow.
I mean, I could have, yeah, I would say so. The scene, there's a lot of people trying to do it, but yeah, there's probably not enough kind of places to, you know what I mean? I think we need a good festival back. Like, I know they had that one in Irvine, kind of, was it not? Maybe last year, I think, the Making Waves Festival.
Yeah, I went to that, John. But I mean, it was good. It was a good festival, but I mean, it was terribly marketed. Like, you know, I mean, see if you weren't if you Irvine or Killie or Kilwirren, you wouldn't have known it was on. But
Maybe.
hopefully that's because I felt it was a good success. You know, I think who was the headliner again?
Delamitri, was it
Della
no?
Meadry, aye, it was Della
Oh.
Meadry, and they were
Oh,
class.
Fatherson played as well, didn't they? I think.
Fatherson, Twin Atlantic. There was a lot of good acts at it, so it would be good to have something like that in Ayrshire again. And obviously you've got the annual kind of Press Fest, and you've got what's the other one?
Live at Troon, I've been at before.
Live at Troon, yeah, that's good. Yep.
And you have got some wee kind of local festivals as well, like in the kind of some of the kind of villages and stuff like that, but it's kind of one off maybe for like a week or so. Whereas having something kind of, as I say, regular would be good. Because think of the venues we've got in Ayrshire. The Grand Hall, I think it's a cracking place for a gig. Obviously, the beer playing later in the year, I've been to many a good gig there, but I think it's
Yeah, the
closing down for
Grand
about
Hall's a great
a
venue.
while.
I seen Kasabian in there and
Aye.
mind blowing, man, honestly.
That was the one. That was a gig,
I
John. That was a gig, John, where some cunt jumped off
have
the.
the
That was
balcony.
carnage. I was there myself.
It was a good night. I think they announced like a wee sort of tour because they were doing a warm up for Glastonbury. They were heading Glastonbury like a week later or something. So yeah, it was a good night, that one. Got to see the view, obviously, in December
Yep.
at Shambolics as well.
Yep. Yeah, I'll be
Looking
there.
forward to that.
I would be there as well. But the town hall in June's pretty good as well, venue. Pretty decent
Yeah, I've
that,
been
yep.
there. I've seen the view in there as well, actually.
But I think Irvine, what's the kind of biggest venue in Irvine? I know the Harbour Arts Centre gets used a bit, but it's not that big.
Aye, but it probably, I mean, in terms of gig venue, it probably would be the Hack.
Aye, I would say so. I think that only holds about 100, 150 if you're
Aye,
lucky.
maybe. Aye, if you're lucky, aye. But that's probably, I mean, there are halls, but no, I mean, you wouldn't need no halls that you could have a gig in.
Obviously, the Magnum used to, I mean, like you've had the
Aye.
Smiths and I've seen the Waterboys in the Magnum. So,
Aye.
actually, yeah, I think that was about 2004, possibly.
You
Yeah.
manage to see Oasis at the beach?
No, well, I actually heard it from Stevenson. You could actually hear it. I remember my gran, I was at my gran's house one night, and I remember I was going down the garage or something. You could just hear it was, you know what I mean? You could actually hear it for Irvine Beach Park. I think I was about maybe 14 at the time. So I was kind of into hardcore music then, so I didn't become like a sort of kind of guitar fan and kind of into indie. Obviously, I discovered all the indie bands not long after that. So I kind of just missed out.
Here's a crazy thing, right? So in terms of kind of gigs you would go to now, in terms of big bands like that stature, I mean, you can pay about, I don't know, three figures now for bands.
Yeah.
Oasis played, The Verve, Cast and Ocean Colour Scene supported them. The ticket was £12.50.
Which is amazing. Some lineups, a dream lineup, to be honest.
Brilliant lineup. That. So
Think like Bjork and Alabama 3 and all that played as well. I think maybe the following year. I can't remember what it was called, but my mate was there. He's got the ticket.
did they? How
Yeah,
old?
I think it was Underworld, Bjork, Alabama 3, Julian Cope. There was a few other folk. Can't remember what it was called, but it was a 2 day thing. Maybe the
Oh,
year after Oasis, maybe 96 possibly, and then I don't know if anything ever appeared back since then. I think that was maybe the last time that, well, apart from your kind of Radio One road shows and stuff that they've done at the
yeah.
beach
Again,
park.
interesting to see more of that stuff happening now. I don't know. As I say, it's like when I think about going to see Oasis at Barlick back in the day, I don't think I've ever had a gig again at a gig there. Whether the locals were not too happy about maybe a lot of empty bottles getting left or
But
whatever, but
those are special gigs, though, John, aren't they? I mean, when you think about certain ones, that I mean, the most recent one that comes to mind for me, and he's not everybody's cup of tea, but when I went to see Gerry Cinnamon at Hampden the other year, for me, I mean, although it's Hampden, right? So it's, you know, been there, they're 10 a penny gigs at Hampden, but that was a special gig, you know. Try to think other gigs. I mean, you know, one of my mates went to see Runrig at Loch Lomond on their farewell tour a couple of years back there. You know, special gigs, you know, at a particular place and a particular time. Those are those, you know, you're saying about Oasis at the Irvine Beach Park or at Balloch. I mean, they're just, you know, iconic gigs that you're always really glad to be able to say, you know, I went to that, you know.
One of those few times I'm lucky enough to be old, to be there. Brings us on to then, John, what's the best gig you've ever been to?
I'd say Radiohead. They're probably my most favourite band. Don't listen to them that much anymore, but I think Radiohead, I think they're quite unique. I don't think they sound like a lot of other bands.
Any
Which speak to
particular
them.
gigs that, sorry, on you go.
Yeah, probably Medibank. I seen them in 2006 at Medibank Stadium before it got revamped. Obviously, that's been changed recently, hasn't it? And Beck supported. And we were late. We missed Beck, actually, which I was a bit gutted. I think Radiohead played Creep for the first time in, I don't know, like 15 years or something like that. So it was it was a good day. I think they played a lot of new material and it was just, a magical night.
I've never actually managed to get to see them. I remember going to Tea in the Park, and I think it was between 95 or 96. I think maybe 96, and they were headlining the main stage. I think they maybe were, but I was a fan of the Bluetones, so I went to see the Bluetones instead. And then after playing Tea in the Park, Radiohead became that big, it was really difficult tickets unless you're on mailing list and all that type of thing, or a hardcore fan. So I regret that, not getting to see them, because I've not seen them since. What about you, Dave, Josh, favourite gigs you've ever been to?
Recently, the Snots, in terms of seeing them at Radio One's big weekend, I really enjoyed the Snots. And I did not have something on in Glasgow, I did not have something on at the end of July. And I've been going to see them at the Battlefields in Glasgow because they were on that night, end of July. So I've obviously been good to see them. It's up there, absolutely. Who else have I went and seen? Stereophonics at Tea at the Park just before it absolutely capitulated, in terms of no more, because I'm obviously that young. There's obviously been a couple of other bands as well, but yes, a few. We'd like to go to more, but I've not had an opportunity to go and see like the Skylights, for example, who come to Aberdeen as probably on an annual basis now because of the relationship with Aberdeen Football Club and whatever have you. So they've obviously been quite good for the city as a whole as well. But yeah, I'd like to get an opportunity to go and see more. I did have tickets, funnily enough, for a few events just before COVID. Who did I have tickets to go and see? It was bands such as, what they call it, it'll come to me. But anyway, I've obviously had a few tickets to go and see bands, and then COVID, I kind of brushed that all away. So I've had a bit of an unlucky time when it comes to bands, in all honesty, John.
Aye. You should get yourself to Tunnels on Saturday. Mark Sharp and the Bicycle Thieves are playing. They've been on the podcast before. Album just came out 2 or 3 weeks ago. They are superb. The album's brilliant. So get yourself there.
Sorry, John. Mark Sharp, did you say?
Mark Sharp and the Bicycle Thieves. So they're playing at Tunnels this Saturday. Could be venue that I've been to before, actually, to it.
Yeah, I've been to Tunnels. Yeah, it is really good.
Josh, yourself.
Best gig ever, favorite gig ever. Well, I mean, I've got to say, Jerry Cinnamon at Hampden was right up there. Really, really was right up there. Bruce Springsteen, when I went to see him, just the other month, the last night of his European tour at Monza, that was incredible. That was the third time I've seen Bruce. I went to see The View in 2014. They'd done an unplugged gig at the Oran Mor. They'd done a lot of the kind of they'd done a lot of the kind of tracks that the fans are all really fans of for the album, for the back, you know, back. So a lot of stuffy Bread and Circuses and Cheeky for a Reason that I'm really, really into. That maybe you would need. I mean, for example, if you go to see them at, you know, the O2 Academy or the Grand Hall, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get Superstar Tradesmen and Same Jeans and Shock Horror and all that. But you know, when I went to see them at the Oran Mor in 2014, they were doing, you know, things like The Best Lasts Forever and Witches and, you know, stuff that is maybe a wee bit more realization stuff that's a wee bit more kind of niche to the View fan base. So that was an incredible gig. That was a really, really special gig for me particularly. So I think what else, man? Do you know, it's that way. I've actually had so many fucking incredible gigs over the years.
You rarely go to a bad gig. I don't think I've ever can say I've been to a bad gig. Been to plenty of bad football matches, but rarely a bad gig.
I'll agree with that one. But I've not been to many bad gigs either. See, my worst gig, honestly, you'll probably be a bit surprised at this. It was Arctic Monkeys 2009 in the SECC, and honestly, it was diabolical. It was dreadful. And I was like buzzing out my nut to see them, do you know what I mean? And it wasn't that great at all. But I think it was just the sound and the venue. I don't know. There was something. It was like the SECC was there was no sitting. Normally there was like a kind of built up stand thinking around about it, and it was just a pure clear hall that night. And I don't know, it was a bit unusual.
It's not my favourite venue. I'm not a big fan of the
Nah,
Hydro either. I'm going to the Hydro this
aye.
weekend for a gig.
I mean, probably one of my worst gigs was at the Hydro. Went to see Paolo Nutini there on the Caustic Love tour. And to be fair, Paolo was great, but it was probably more the seats. I mean, we were right up the back of the Hydro, and we were so far away. It was like you were talking at normal volume and you could hear each other speak. You know what I mean? It was like, you know, you were actually having to listen. Like to the, it was as if you were watching them from a distance. You know what I mean? Just thinking there. By the way, while we're on Scottish artists, great gigs that I've been. It went to an incredible gig last year. Went to see Travis at Prince's Street Gardens in Edinburgh. Outside gig. It was the 20th anniversary of the Invisible Band. They just played the full album from start to finish. It was fucking incredible. That was a great gig. But If you're asking me pish gigs, I would probably say that Paolo Rettini one was right up there. And a few ones for the old student days that I look. The Saturdays, man, I went to see the Saturdays. They were bad.
They had issues after it, innit? songs.
No, I mean, they were bad. I don't know, quite. I mean, obviously, they look great, right? But See, I thought they were like all girl bands, at least they can all sing. No, this band, by the way, I'm not surprised they didn't last long.
Tell you what, though, I feel it now because you're mentioning about that Invisible Band 20 years. I seen Travis when it came out. So that, again, shows my age. I'd have seen that gig. I had a good T-shirt as well from it. But
probably one of the only kind of Scottish bands that I've not seen, in all honesty. I just don't know how I've never seen them. Like, I mean, I've been to a lot of festivals and that as well, so I'm just surprised I've not seen them went to a gig. I've just seen them at a festival before, so... Yeah, but I'm a bit kind of disappointed to say I've not seen Travis, so here you go, guys.
Correct that, though. We're still kind of playing the odd gig here and there. Who would you say your influences were?
Hold on,
John, right? Could John and I and Dave take a wee shot at this? Just because, I mean, obviously we've been listening to some of your tunes, some of your music, John. Listen to it, hearing a wee bit. Right, yeah. I've got a couple of artists I want to throw at you, right, that I was kind of thinking when I was listening to your music.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so I was thinking Cast, The Laz, certainly Oasis. I was thinking Radiohead as well.
Right.
And I was thinking, oh God, who was the other one? I was thinking, fuck, it'll come back to me. John,
I was thinking, I heard a bit of Ashcroft there.
The Verve, that was it, The Verve, aye, that was the other band I'd thought of.
When I was listening.
Cool.
But your influences were very different to what we are saying.
I don't know. My influences are probably the Black Rebel Motorcycle Club, Jesus and Mary Chain, Brian Jonestown Massacre. I would say Oasis, kind of Ocean Colour Scene. I don't know, Tom Petty. I don't know, I could go on and go on and go on, to be honest. But I don't know, Pink Floyd as well. Just loads of bands, really, to be honest. But yeah, I like Primal Scream as well.
Okay, I get Tom Petty, John. I get that. Listen to some of your tracks, you know, some of the kind of guitar in it. I can hear kind of elements of Tom Petty's type of music in it. It's good. Yeah, your stuff that you've got on Spotify there that was able to listen to the day was sounding good. What I wanted to ask you was, what do you play off of?
I use Ableton as for like recording and doing my songs and stuff. But I use an Epiphone ES-339 hollow body. Red, and then I've just got a Yamaha electroacoustic, so that's the, and I've got a wee Tanglewood as well, which just collects dust, really.
one of the boys in the podcast, Scott McGill, was asking what your favourite guitar is.
Probably, I would say, I want to get the Noel Gallagher guitar, the Gibson. I think that's probably my next guitar, but I'm not sure what my missus will say. we're spending maybe a couple of grand on it or something, but no, I think Noel Gallagher's acoustic, I would certainly love that. I think that'd be my dream guitar.
I'm going to throw AC/DC Coldplay out there as well.
What was that, sorry?
Oh, this was more for John Brown.
Oh, sorry.
John
Hamilton.
Yeah. I'm going to throw out AC/DC and Coldplay out there as well.
What for?
In what capacity,
just
Dave?
Based on what you guys have been saying. Oh, sorry, based on influences or whatever have you.
Right, okay. What for your influences?
Well, not influences in terms of me being a musician or anything like that. Just basically, just refer to what you guys have been coming out and saying.
Okay.
I think you're under the influence, Dave.
um, Right, okay. We've touched on the fact that Radiohead being one of your favourite bands. Who would be your dream act to support?
Do you like to support?
Like maybe first of all, your dream Scottish act, if there was a Scottish act first of all, and then maybe.
Probably the Mary Chain, I would say, for Scottish act. It'd have been great to support Frightened Rabbit. I've actually met Scott Hutchison.
Oh, wow.
So I think they were playing Freshers Week in Paisley. Can't remember what year, but I remember they put it up on their social media that they were going to play Fop in Glasgow that same day. They were going to do an in-store acoustic thing. And I said to my missus, I think I had the day off work, so I said to my missus, let's jump up early and we'll go and see them twice. And I think when we stopped at Paisley, Scott Hutchison got on the train along with his brother. And I was kind of half pished. I think I had a few cans in me. So I was talking away to him and I was just like, oh, can you play Be Less Rude for me? So I remember when we got down there, I just kept shouting it in between every song, play Be Less Rude. And he actually done it for me. So it was a cool moment. And somebody else, it's actually up on YouTube, somebody else had videoed it and it's all on video on YouTube. You can hear me in the background shouting it and he plays it for me. So quite a good thing. I think he was mega talented, so I think maybe Frightened Rabbit if obviously he was still here, of course.
Yeah. What's your opinion actually on people talking through gigs?
Oh, I don't know. I'm probably a sucker for doing it myself, to be honest. So, I've seen some people gaff their head. Honestly, like seriously, I think it's getting a bit more like that now. But yeah, I've been to a few gigs and there's been a few folk telling me to shut up, basically. So,
Right, so it's you. It's the one that's out for
I maybe, but
more
no.
remote.
I don't know. I
Suppose,
think it
right?
depends who you're going to see, of course, how quiet the gig is. Do you know what I mean? I think if it's a rock gig and there's people talking, that's fair enough. But I think if it's a very kind of quieter gig and there's people talking, I don't think you should be doing it really.
I agree with you there, Sean. And I think there's a level of a basic politeness as well. For example, if you're going to see somebody and it's a busy, busy bar or a busy, busy club or something, and they're playing a set in the background and it's acoustic and they're not interacting with the audience much, then you can probably excuse, folk that kind of chatter in the bar or the club. However, if it's a gig and the artist is interacting with the crowd and is they are the sole focus within that environment, I think it is a bit cheeky to loudly speak, or to shout or anything like that. But agree with you, like you said. I mean, you go to a gig at the AB, well, no, the ABC, now it's burnt down, but you go to a gig at the O2 or the Hydro or whatever. There's thousands of people yakking away at each other.
Like it's more so your smaller venues, like if you're at Tots, and then there's folk there that you think, are you here to hear, listen to the band, are you here just to have a chat? So if you are, fuck off downstairs. Right, this is a good question that someone asked before in one of the music football specials. What's your least favourite track from your favourite artist? Was that you that asked that, Josh? Or was it somebody else?
Nah, it must have been somebody else, don't mind.
It's a good, quite a good question.
Least
So
favorite
your
track.
favorite artist was Radiohead, was it? Or was it
Yeah.
Jesus and Mary Chain?
I would say it's Radiohead there, my all-time number one, I would say. I don't think that will ever change.
Right.
Least favorite track for Radiohead. Whoa. That is a good question. I have got a few stinkers, mind you, but it's just trying to think of one of them now. I don't know. I think Kid A was a wee bit kind of overproduced. When they played it live, it was just a different story. So there's probably a couple of tracks on that that's probably I can't think of one. Of maybe Kid A, the actual album track on that.
Okay. This is a tough one here. If you had to write a song for Air United or England, who would you choose?
Oh fuck! It's a
Football's
tough
coming
one, man.
home.
See, honestly, my missus asked me all the time. See, if you had to choose Rangers or Celtic, who would you choose? And I'm like, none of them. Just like, I don't know.
You could be the new Somerset Bow Pier, John.
It's good. It's good. Oh man. I can't even make you answer this. I don't know. I'm gonna go with England.
Right, you could make a bit of money off it, maybe.
I absolutely love how petty Scottish football is, by the way. It's brilliant. Yeah, I mean, there you've put the question to him, John, and he's actually choosing three lines on his shirt before saying, "Aye, I'll write an United song."
Aye.
Exactly, aye. Right, that covers the music, some of the music stuff for now. We'll come back kind of later on, but Weekend Action, Kelly obviously played Hibs. The
Yeah.
Montgomery's first game in charge, not a good start for Hibs. Sorry for Kilmarnock, but it turned out all right. We're kind of 2-2 draw. Don't know if you.
Yeah, I seen it. Obviously, we could have snatched it right at the end. These kind of sliced it past the post. But I think from what I've heard and kind of read, I think we were really bad in the first half, like terrible. A lot of people just kind of questioning McInnes's tactics in a sense, but it was a great comeback and we could have almost won it. So a draw is not a bad result when you're 2-0 down at home.
Are you a fan of McInnes?
I think he is a good manager. Do you know what I mean? I do. I think he'll go to Rangers, in all honesty. I think he'll be a future Rangers manager. I do. Because there's not a lot of people out there for the job, so I can see him jumping ship. But yeah, I think he's a half decent manager. I do. I think he done well at Aberdeen, and I think, I don't know, if he doesn't do that great this season, then maybe some more Kelly fans will be questioning him.
Josh and Dave, what do you think? The Hibs from Montgomery showed some good play in the first half, certainly.
They did in the first half, but I think, look, I think Hibs's biggest problem is that they're not very good defensively. Whether or not Montgomery will be able to get, more out of them than previous managers have been able to, is yet to be seen. But I just think, I mean, the game showed up again that Hibs are just a poor, poor defensive team. I think I know Fish and Bushiri started, I think, didn't they? However, I just feel that I don't think Hibs have signed well in defence for a number of years. I think Stevenson's probably past his best, and I say that about Hanlon and all. I don't actually think either Fish or Bushiri are very good centre backs. They made a big deal about signing Fish in the summer, and I don't see it. I've never seen it with Bushiri either. So I think I think they're in bother defensively. You've got to hope that that your man Nick Montgomery is going to get a better tune out of them going forward, because they do have quality going forward. That's no doubt. They've got quality. They will score goals, but I mean, they go 2-0 up away to Killie. Hard place to go in the plastic. All this, Derek McInnes' team, hard to beat. All that, and they go 2-0 up. They do all the hard work, and then they concede two pretty sloppy goals, faking a stramashes in the box. Albeit the Vassell one. Sorry, the Vassell one was a decent finish, although I do think the keeper probably could have done better. But then the second one was pretty stramashy for me. I just felt like, a better defence wouldn't have conceded those goals.
I would it be fair to say that the ability defensively and attack is miles apart?
I had a, yeah, definitely.
Like that one.
I think it shows. I think it shows the job that Montgomery has in his hands at Hibs. I mean, it was never going to be a quick fix, but the honeymoon period is very much here for Nick Montgomery. And I think that was just epitomised and justified by the fact they were 2-0 up on Saturday against Kilmarnock. Because let's be honest, I think the timescale for Hibs has been quite good in terms of they got him in Monday morning. He did his media stuff straight into work, and he was no nonsense based in terms of his terms and the way he put his message across to the media and to also to Angel Scott before the game on Saturday. And I mean, he took that on board. He obviously got the players into action very early on in training, and they obviously had a good bit of action. Obviously, good 2-0 up, but they maybe just worked that streetwise mentality in the last 15 minutes, and that's maybe something that's maybe resonated from the previous manager Lee Johnson, where they just don't know how to stick out and see off games. And that's something Montgomery will work towards. I think Hibs fans are a lot more confident about this appointment than capacity that other managers have had in the past. And I'd argue it's one of the best ones the fans probably since Neil Lennon or Jack Ross in terms of how Montgomery can stamp his authority onto the team. Because let's be honest, with modern day football, there's this big word that managers come out and say, and it's massive, philosophy. It's something that Montgomery doesn't buy into. And that could be, I'm not saying that's pivotal, because the way managers speak is irrelevant when it comes to delivering on the park. But exactly the same time, the type of message that Montgomery is putting out there should be a promising aspect for Hibs fans.
Just going back to earlier in the season, your smile must have been massive, John, when you beat Rangers and then knocked Celtic out of the cup.
Aye, it was some start. Obviously, we get beat a couple after that, and I don't know. I'm thinking, I'm kind of laughing to my missus saying we can only beat Rangers and Celtic, you know what I mean? But it was good to at least get a point for the game at the weekend and hopefully start kind of picking up a bit more points. But I couldn't have dreamed for a better start, really. Obviously, we drew the Hearts away. We're pretty good at going to Tynecastle. We've got a right good record there. But yeah, I think Kelly should do all right this season, but it's early days, isn't it?
Aye, with a few tipping them for top six, certainly.
Well, hopefully, I think that's got to be the aim for Kelly. I mean, a lot of people were kind of maybe saying, oh, we didn't do great last season, but I think when you get promoted, your aim's just to stay in the league. I know we just done it in the last game of the season, but I mean the target was done to just stay in the league and then obviously build on it for there. So I think Kelly fans will definitely be expecting a bit more this season than obviously last season.
Right, we'll move across to McDermott Park, the early kickoff on Saturday. Josh, what were your thoughts? A few changes with the Rangers team. Yilmaz in, Davies in, Lawrence first start since coming back from injury, Matondo scores. Some positives.
Matondo was a positive. The goal he took was taken very well, and it was very well worked. And I do think that we really suffered when he went off, because I thought that was the first opportunity Matondo had had to really set out his place and set, play through the middle and really, kick on and see how he's going to be. And he's ended up with a fractured cheekbone, so he'll be out for however many weeks. I do think that it was a bit, I think it was a bit samey, like it had been in a few of the games up before the international break. I think we were back to fourth. We were back side to side. I didn't understand what we were actually trying to do a lot of the time. Beal confuses me a wee bit. You know, he put Yil puts Yilmaz in, and he's not even in the Europa League squad. But then Scott Wright is in the Europa League squad, and he can't even make the bench. in a league game against St Johnstone's. So there are elements of the team that are confusing me about why he's playing certain players and when. You know, I maintain. I mean, you look at someone like Cifuentes, he seems to have fell right off out of Bill's thoughts. He's just sitting on the bench every week now. So I don't understand it myself. Yeah, I mean, the second goal was well taken. Lawrence really came in to the game when he got put into the middle in the second half. And Matondo done okay, done well for the goal, sorry. So yeah, look, 2-0, a win, and exactly what we needed. So, you know, hear any complaints from me? Could it have been better? Yes. But, you know, ultimately our season is going to be defined by if we need to keep winning games, and we need to win as many games as possible, and we need to hope Celtic slip up somewhere. And then obviously we need to perform against them when we get them at Celtic Park. So it was fine, but I'm not going to tell you that I could list a million positives, because there weren't many, and that's with six changes to the team.
I probably made with the European tie on Thursday in mind, I would hazard a guess. Dave, take us to Tyne Castle. A chance for you to see where it went wrong.
Disappointed, eh? Disappointed, eh? Neil, but if I have to be Neil McCann, I'll happily be Neil McCann for you, because Neil McCann was absolutely spot on with what he'd said in his post match during the fact debrief, because quite simply, I believe, were just simply not good enough. Too many direct balls, vulnerable defensively, all over the place. And then the two Hearts goals just signal a bad day in the office as far as I'm concerned. Bojan Miloski, is he a target man? Absolutely not. He's the type of guy that he's better suited and will score more goals and will be much more formidable for you if you're playing balls down the channels, you're playing down the systems, you're trying to get wide players involved, you're trying to send in cross balls. You have to attack in the six-yard area, ready to just go and score. That's where Bjorski's got his joy this season for Aberdeen. And the fact that we're going direct in the hope of trying to find him is quite simply not good enough, and it's quite simply unacceptable as well. Duke, I've said this point to people, and I don't know if people agree on this show tonight, but I've said to people that I thought Duke had a purple patch last season. And I don't know if that's because he did so well last season, or has his head been turned by interest from elsewhere? Because there's not been much interest, but there's been interest. We're quite simply, the interest from elsewhere is going to be much more financial incentives, much more higher incentives in terms of clubs, in terms of caliber of clubs, magnitude of clubs, whatever help you. So my gut feeling tells me that he's kind of been turned by maybe bigger clubs or further interest from elsewhere. And then defensively, well, you've said it yourself, John, privately on our group chat, and the issue is, let's be honest, it was five new players forming that defensive backline, and let's be honest, the workers all know they've just seen each other at Inverdee playing fields for 5 minutes and hadn't spent the last 11, 10, 11 days forming a relationship with each other. So, two men, in my honest opinion, and I've said this to John Bleasdale privately, I think we've tried to field too many new players too fast. For me, we should have embedded them in and drip fed them in slowly but surely, rather than fielding all these players. And don't get me wrong, I think moving forward, if Barry Robson gets the time to go and do so, I think there could be positive players for Aberdeen that make that positive impression, but we're not feeding them. That's where I think the problem is right now.
I think part of the problem as well is, see, because we've had Glass, we've then had Goodwin, we've now got Robson, and they've not been there for that long, we're constantly having to churn players. So you're constantly, whoever comes in is trying to, you know, rebuild. We got rid of a lot of players in the summer, obviously, and then, as you say, I mean, we've brought in 17 players. Massive issues just now. If you look at the kind of stats, since Robson became permanent manager, and this is miserable
Stuart's
leading.
13. Sorry,
Do
John
you think
Stewart.
his interviews lately?
Full of excuses. It's like
He
he's
seems a wee
embroiled.
bit lackluster, didn't he, in his interviews, I think. I don't
It seems like he's on
know.
borrowed time, but
The other thing as well, Joe, the other thing as well, the two Johns, is that his messages are quite repetitive.
It doesn't seem like he's inspiring the dressing room just now. And there's a massive concern. We like to laugh at Hibs, but the issue is at the moment Aberdeen are in danger of becoming another Hibs, whereby they're constantly changing manager. We were really lucky to have McInnes and have that continuity for so long, because it doesn't happen much now in modern
I
football.
know it's no like Aberdeen, really, is it? I mean, Aberdeen's never really been struggling very often in a long time, you know what I mean? So it's kind of worrying for them. And I think they've spent a lot of money this season as well. So
Yeah, it's been a very difficult.
I think the thing for Barry Robson, sorry, John. I think the thing for Barry is that he basically got the job because he had a very good temporary spell, right? Dave Cormack would have been, if I'm going to be very, very honest, a certain section of Aberdeen supporters, he'd have been ridiculed by them for maybe appointing a Stephen Robinson or a Jack Ross, as has been touted previously, or any other manager that came out and reckoned as far as Aberdeen were concerned for a new manager. Barry Robson became a guy that he had to be appointed just because of the results he was picking up. And everybody associated with Aberdeen thought that Rangers result in particular, and thought we could go at that next level with Barry Robson. But at exactly the same time, we probably played our best football under Barry because we played a certain way, and Robson kind of went away from that a little bit, and that was where it went a little bit disappointed. And why fix something that ain't broke? And that's where I think Robson has got wrong with what he's trying to do. Get back to the basics and see where it goes. Thursday for me is a bit of a write-off. I don't think a Barry Robson should be defined at all by Thursday. It's Pittodrie on Sunday, and then up the A9 or A9 to 6 and A9 to Dingwall next Sunday is what defines Barry Robson for me.
I mean, if those results don't go Aberdeen's way, the expectation for me would be it'd be gone by the end of this month.
Oh, absolutely. But people are going to be reactionary to this in a certain way by saying Dave Cormack's at Tynecastle on Saturday, the inevitable is probably going to happen. At exactly the same time, Dave Cormack's been in post as chairman for just under 4 years now. Yeah, because he got appointed in November 2019. So he's just been in post as chairman for just under 4 years now. And that's potentially four managers in 4 years if Barry Robson does get let go at the end of the month, if that's your implication or your way of, or that's what you're trying to imply, John. So, yeah, it could be very interesting indeed. And if that's the way Aberdeen want to go, then fine. But Aberdeen have to have stability. As you say, John Hamilton, they can't start being a Hibs club where they're getting rid of managers left, right, and centre, and there's no stability. Because Glass was 12 signings, Goodwin was 12 and 13 signings, and Robson's 13 signings. So, quite simply, that payroll at Aberdeen Football Club is evolving all the time. And quite simply, the employees list at Aberdeen is ever changing as well.
I mean, as you say, I mean, the game on Thursday with European ties, I mean, I fear the worst spot against Frankfurt, but we shall see what happens. Maybe it'll be a game that will suit us a wee bit differently, because Frankfurt will be coming at us. We're playing on the counter attack, but the hoofball tactics are crazy. When you've got a boy with the ability of Clarkson in midfield, it's criminal. And then to not replace Ramadani in any way in midfield is Milan leaving Shinny look like a very inadequate player at the moment as well. Know that the midfield seen much of the ball. And then he's kind of left himself, he's stuck on this formation. I've said it before, we don't have enough wingers in the squad for him to change it. Something needs to change. You can't keep on going with plan A, plan A, plan A if plan A keeps on not working. And at the moment, I don't see a plan B from him. But you never know. Maybe he can turn it around. The other games.
We've got the perfect guy on very briefly. John, how's Matty Kennedy been getting on? Because you speak about wit for it. I know Matty Kennedy wasn't everybody's cup of tea at Aberdeen, but exactly the same time. But can we do with somebody like him again?
Yeah, I think he's been doing well for Kelly since he's been back. I think a lot of people's kind of glad to see him back. Obviously, he was a young boy when he kind of left Kelly. I think he only had about, 14 appearances. A lot of them were like sub appearances, and then he kind of went to Everton. But no, I think Kennedy, I think he's been playing better than Armstrong, in all honesty. And all this, Armstrong had a strong season last season, he was a top scorer. So I think Kennedy's he's looking. Yeah, I think he's a good wee player. I really do.
Marley Watkins has been doing well for you as well.
Yeah, it was a kind of late signing with him, and he's come in and done pretty well for us. Don't think we've got a lot of strikers, Kelly. You know what I mean? But I know we've been kind of trying to get somebody in, and we get was it Dallas on loan?
Yeah.
Everyone was expecting Sam Cosgrove to come. That was the kind of rumours that Cosgrove was coming. But obviously he signed for somebody else down south, didn't he?
I think it was Barnsley, maybe. I think that he signed for. The other games that took place on Saturday, Celtic against Dundee. Fairly comfortable for Celtic. What do you think of the penalty? So I've seen some people question online about the contact. Was it similar to the contact in the Old Firm game where Roof's goal ended up not standing?
No, wasn't it? It was a penalty. When I've seen it in real time at first, I didn't think it was a penalty. And then I seen the replay, and I seen where his foot was when he made contact. And I thought, yeah, that is, it's in the box, it's a penalty. It was not the same as the Old Firm one. It was a penalty. The Old Firm one was near foul. So it was a penalty, and Celtic got it and scored, and VAR done its job there. So you know that you've got to praise VAR for that, even though I absolutely hate it. It was a penalty, but see aside from that, it was just pretty kind of typical Celtic performance. I didn't watch the game, I never do, but I watched the highlights, it was a fairly bog standard kind of performance from Celtic. Pacing themselves along, a couple of decent goals, decent quality goals, and another 3 points for them.
The thing that's staggering is the amount of time that Kyogo manages to go into the box with no one following him.
You've got to say, John, see the Kyogo goal, right? I do think that was poor. It was poor because there was a Dundee United player done at the time, and I hate to see that. I really, really, because all the Dundee United, all the Dundee players are stunning about. You know, when they're in defensive, as if thinking Celtic are going to give the ball back. They've got a player done, and I can't remember who it is, just puts the ball over for Kyogo to run in behind and score the second goal. Personally, I just think that's poor.
Well, I mean, they've only seen the highlights, so I don't know. I mean, it's a head knock, it's up to the referee to stop it, but if it's not a head knock, then Celtic are free to do what they want. As long as it's not a bad injury, I think.
I think there's an element of sporting integrity then, isn't there? There's an element of, I mean, if you rewatch the second goal, the whole Dundee team were kind of, you know, they were expecting Celtic to give the ball back. You know, it was the whole kind of body language of the team was, you know, lethargic, not pressing, you know, and there seemed to be just an understanding that, and then, yeah, I just thought it was, thought it was poor form.
What about you, Dave, John, would you think?
I don't think they're looking amazing, to be honest. But I don't know. I don't know. I thought it was comfortable win, I suppose, for Celtic, but I don't think they're firing in all cylinders yet, if you know what I mean. I think they could be playing a bit better. Not that I want them to, mind you, but.
Yeah, I didn't watch the game, to be honest with you, John. I was busy having a couple of pints on Saturday night. But good run for Celtic. Comfortable performance by all accounts. Dundee did have chances. I know McCown had a good chance because I watched a bit of Tony Docherty's interview just before we came on, actually. But yeah, the job done for Celtic. By all accounts, Dundee played pretty well within the game as well. So that obviously will give them a bit of confidence, especially not just parking the bus teams such as Celtic away. So that's obviously very, very pleasing as far as that's concerned. But for Celtic, 3 points and job done, and on to tomorrow night against Feyenoord.
Yes. The other weekend games, we had the battle for the second Champions League place between Motherwell and St Mirren at Fir Park. St Mirren get the win. Looked like a decent game. Motherwell had chances, certainly. St Mirren's goal was probably one of the best of the weekend. The cross from Strain and then Tanzer hits it in the volley.
It
So,
was a good goal.
good result for St Mirren. And then the other game was Ross County and Livingston scored draw. David Martindale said they were lucky to get the point. Pretty poor performance from Livingston. I don't know whether there was some talk in one of the kind of group chats that when is Martindale maybe kind of lost interest a wee bit as his time maybe up at Livingston. I don't know. I think too early to say.
Be a character.
He does. He looks a wee bit kind of uneasy. Martindale, I don't know. He's looking a wee bit edgy, you know, like he's got a wee bit of sand in his shoes. So I don't know. Maybe I don't know. Maybe he's ready to leave. I don't know. I like Martindale, so we'll
His
see how.
interviews are good.
Yeah. I
I
like
like
him.
him as well.
I don't want him to go anywhere.
I do quite like him. I think, I don't know, I know Livy's been a bit slow this season, but I don't know, they're one of the kind of teams that just put some surprising results all the time. So I don't know. But yeah, I think if he doesn't start picking up, maybe we could see him go.
Right, okay, let's get back to some of the music stuff. How do you get into your music in terms of playing it?
Probably just through my pals. I think one of my pals, Chris, he used to just kind of bring his guitar down. He was a couple of years older than me, so he used to bring his guitar down, and I don't know, he left his guitar for a while, and I just kind of started messing about with it. But I was always into music before that. I was a bit of a late developer with the guitar. I don't think I started really kind of playing it till I was like 25 or something. So I've only really started to get half kind of, I don't know, decent in the past. I don't know, probably feel a bit locked down. Like, I don't know. I couldn't even sing and play the guitar. I couldn't do the two of them at the same time. And then kind of around lockdown, I don't know, I was at the back door and just managed to start singing and playing. Not very good at playing other people's tunes. I just like, kind of, I don't know. I think like making your own music's a bit easier than learning somebody else's in a sense. So I think that's what's I've always been interested in. And then as soon as you can sing and play the guitar, I've just had loads of ideas. I mean, Sand in My Shoes is probably about 20-year-old. Do you know what I mean? It's like one of the first wee kind of riffs I had in the guitar, and I've maybe had that kind of sand in my shoes kind of line in my head for a while, and then I don't know, it's just been like a bit of a jigsaw that's took a while to do.
I Josh and me, so I messaged Josh before the podcast and I said, let's have a wee game and try and get your songs into
I like it, I
the
like
podcast.
it.
I
I've
know
seen
I noticed you kind of noticed you had a wee smile at times.
you said miles apart, and Joe said Sand in My Shoes. No, I'm like,
The sand in my shoes one, that was a fucking difficult one to try to get without you noticing, by the way. So,
we
you
needed
know what
sand dancer
I mean?
back.
Miles apart. What was the other ones, John?
Feel it now, so I managed to get that in.
Oh,
I
you did see that as
We
well.
were talking
That's
about
great, eh?
Travis. And then I said to John as well, I said, your smile must have been massive when at the start of the season.
Oh, I sure you did.
I see.
Aye, aye. He's doing well.
I mean, they were easy enough, but sand in my shoes, that was... I was trying to get that slipped in there as if it was like, as if that was something people say. Do you know what I mean? When somebody's a wee bit edgy about wanting to leave. You know what I mean? But didn't get past you.
You've done well. You've done well, mate, honestly.
Interesting. I'd seen Clyde Banks. I don't know whether someone in Clyde Banks involved in music or likes music, but they managed to get every song from Box of Trash's album on commentary, one of their commentary recently. And some of the songs, you're wondering how on earth did they get them in? So, it's a wee bit of fun there. What inspires the songs then? What inspires the music? Is there certain things or just the ideas just coming to you, or is it?
I don't know, to be honest. It's a good question. I don't know. I mean, some of the songs are quite new that I've wrote maybe between now and, lockdown and now. There's a few kind of older ones. I don't know, probably just, I don't know, just life really, and just, I don't know, experiences and kind of things like that, I think that's yeah.
Aye, because what I would, at the moment, there's about four or five songs in Spotify, isn't there?
Aye, I've got five, there's a few kind of live ones and kind of stuff, but yeah, there's five different songs and then a few live ones. I've got a few new ones in the go. I don't know, maybe... Should have an album maybe pretty soon. I think I've maybe got about 9 songs kind of wrote, maybe a few still to tweak here and there. But yeah, and I'm going to go with 9 songs in the album for the number 9 jersey for the Strikers.
Aye, right, okay, I like it. Any upcoming gigs?
No, just now. I've been playing like a few kind of, just like kind of wee kind of jam days and stuff like that. My mate Mick Hargan, he invites me to, like King Tut's, on the Sunday. It's on for like 3 to 6. So
right, okay, aye.
But yeah, I might be playing the Armistice in a couple of weeks in Govan. I've played there quite a few times. Played Tuts a few times as well, but I've not really done that many gigs, to be honest. I've been trying to get over the kind of fear of playing live, to be honest, because I'm a bit of a late developer with the guitar. But no, it's going to be something that I will do more in the future. I've just started to kind of touch base with doing gigs. Maybe I think the first time I ever played live is just back in February this year. So I think I've done maybe kind of 4 wee gigs.
Okay. So it's got something to come. You need to start doing the Jim Morrison and stand with your back to the crowd. Do it that way.
aye. Anton Newcombe, I think the first time I seen the Brian Jonestown Massacre, he used to not face the crowd and like he used to kind of like side on, do you know what I mean? And I'm like, what's he doing? How's he not facing the crowd? And it's just a kind of thing that he does, you know what I mean?
I think I read about, was it Danny McNamara from Embrace? I think he gets proper like a heavy anxiety when he's playing live gigs. Yeah. He's not a big fan of doing it.
I don't know, I seen Embrace Day, the Good Will Out, obviously album, I think maybe 20, maybe 19, I think it was just before COVID and stuff. Hurricane number one supported, and I'm sure he was just facing the crowd all right that night. Either that or I was drunk, you know what I mean?
you were facing the wrong way. right, okay. I think the European ties that are coming up late in the week, we've touched on a wee bit. I don't think we want to mention them anymore. We'll maybe review them next week, depending how well they go. Seem fair enough. I think folk are agreeing to that.
Yep, yep.
Dave, have you got any questions for John before we move on to asking a quick fire end of podcast? Dave? No, nothing from you just now. Right, okay. Josh, you want to go for your one that you always like to ask our music guests, the old DID?
Oh, aye, right. Desert Island Dicks. What is it? What's the numbers we say, John? Is it?
I think it's three. I think we usually do. Is it three albums?
Three right. Albums, three movies. Is that right? Aye.
And a book, three, maybe, is it?
Aye, right. John, Desert Island Dixie, you're on a desert island, three albums, three movies, and one book.
Movies, definitely Dead Man's Shoes. I've actually met Paddy Considine. I've got my 40 with him, which
nice.
I've been buzzing about.
Nice. Like Paddy Considine, I like
yeah,
him.
Great actor. So Dead Man's Shoes, Dusk Till Dawn. First time I ever seen that.
Yeah,
I was
love
blown
that.
Away. Like, I thought it was like two different movies, in all honesty. Third one, I'll go for an old one, an old classic that we'll all love. I'll go with Stand By Me. I used to love watching that when I was away. Albums. Oh, it's a toughie. I've got to think here. This is a tough one. You've put me in the spot now. I'll go for Ocean Colour Scene, Mostly Shoals. I love Rage Against the Machine's first album. Absolute mind blowing. and I've got to go with a Radiohead one, of course. It's probably got to be OK Computer, I would say. So I'll go with that. Books. I'm not a big reader, to be honest.
A Scud book then, is it?
No. I know that. I'll go with Andy McCall.
Oh, no, actually, you're all right. You've got From Dusk Till Dawn. I think Salma Hayek's all right in that. So,
that's right. True. definitely. But books. Andy McCall's get a good book. I don't know if he's ever read it. Talks about obviously all his troubles and.
His biography, isn't it?
I think, is it called Torment? That
was a good read, John.
What's that, sorry?
That was a good read, that.
Yeah. No, I've watched a few podcasts with Andy McLaren before, and he's a legend. I like him, man.
right, good choices. Good choices, I like them. Favourite tipple?
Oh, Jack Daniels. For sure, I'm a Jack Daniels connoisseur, man, honestly. Like, that's what I drink. I don't really drink much beer or anything. It's JD all the way.
What's the death row meal? Nico, what's our death row meal?
It's got to be so chili chicken. yeah, that's it. I'll go with that. I could live in that.
No three courses.
Salt and chili chicken for my
salt and,
ch- my main.
Salt and chili chicken out of La Dragon.
No, a Bucks Barn maybe.
Bucks Barn.
I don't know. I'd probably go with a kind of haggis, black pudding starter, salt and chili chicken with curry. Of course, and I don't know, probably be an ice cream. I'm not a big cake fan. It was surprising.
Okay, right, no worries. Right, before we do the showstopper, need to promote the fantasy football again. Remember, Supernova Terrace were our sponsors. Check them out on their website, on their social media. Lots of great products, ideal for going to football. We've got your windbreakers, your t-shirts, your hoodies, and all sorts. And we appreciate their support.
A lot of great gear on Supernova. I had a wee scan through it last night. Waiting to the end of the month after I go to Disneyland to get a couple of wee bits and bobs for the winter upcoming. You know, those cold away days and whatnot. So a lot of good stuff in there, John.
You tempted by the Mount Florida t-shirt?
Yes, I was actually, yep, that was one I was looking at, absolutely.
So, supernovaterraceware.com, nice and simple, straightforward to go into. Right, showstopper, and I was kind to you. We're not always kind to everybody, but we said best 11. So, you're a Kilmarnock fan.
Yeah.
It's up to you what your formation is. What's the best 11 of players that you've seen in your lifetime?
Right, I'm going to go with a 4-4-2. I'm going to go with, I don't know, you probably, well, you might know, I'm going to go with Bobby Geddes. Right,
Right.
because we had some right groovy goalie taps back then. So, and I just remember him kind of growing up, and I've actually played in goals when I was younger, and I was a bit of a keeper back in the day. So I think Bobby Geddes is a keeper. Gus McPherson is my right back. Freddie Dindaloo, centre back. Manu Pascali, centre back. I'm gonna
Pascal,
go
aye.
with wee Greg Taylor at left back. Cockard and McLaren, Andy McLaren on the wings, and Alan Mahoud, local boy as well, and Eremenko
I can intend there.
midfield. And then, that's a tough one. I had Boyd and Naismith, but then I changed it to Boyd and Paul Wright. I got a
Aye.
few subs as well for allude subs.
On you go.
Ray Montgomery, another legend, local legend. Ali Mitchell, Cammy Bell is a keeper, George McCluskey, and Tommy Burns.
That's a good lineup. And then obviously your manager, I take it, Steve Clark.
He's got to be, I think so. Yeah, I know we've had a few good managers, do you know what I mean? There's probably a few I could mention, but I think, I don't know, I think Clark's got a good way, and he's done amazing for us. So yeah, I'll stick with Steve.
Nice one. Right. Okay. John, Dave, you get anything else? All good. Okay. Well, thanks for coming on, John. Let everyone know where can they find you on social media in terms of find your music.
Yeah, you can get me on Spotify, YouTube, Amazon Music, iTunes, just all the kind of usual platforms, I suppose. Give a wee follow. Hopefully have some new music up soon, and hopefully Kelly can keep winning.
Aye, we'll obviously tag you in terms of your socials as well, so that kind of folk know. But Spotify certainly just John Hamilton. Just search that. Nice and straightforward to find. Same on YouTube. Is it just again just search
Yeah,
John Hamilton or?
just John Hamilton, dead original, eh? My mates were kind of saying to me I should use a kind of different name or whatever, but I don't know. I just like to stick to my own name.
You never know. I mean, you never know, John. See when things start getting out, when things start getting bigger and whatnot, you might find you want to use like a pseudonym or something like that to distinguish yourself. You know what I mean? You right. I mean, maybe you'll use one of your classic Kelly players' names. You know what I mean? Like start Alexei Eremenko. You know what I mean? Make
Well,
some sort of a pun on that.
my email's bloody Stig Cockard, know what I mean? My nickname, and then I've got Cockard in there. I've probably had that email for, I don't know, a long, long time. But yeah, nah, I'll keep at it anyway. I definitely will. Music's my religion.
Good religion to have, the only religion to have as well. But the tunes are great. Looking forward
Cheers.
to hearing more from you. Been great having you on as well. Get you back
No,
on again in future as well.
it's been a pleasure. It's been good to be on my first ever podcast experience. So hopefully there's a few more, but it's been a pleasure speaking to you, and hopefully I'll be back on at some point.
That's an ideal place to start. Right. Cheers, Josh and Dave. Good as always. And as a tradition now, happy football.